Every day, AFA offers biblical insight on issues that others aren't willing to touch in the hopes that you'll become a world changer. That's why we're offering an in-depth worldview training course called Activate. 13 different professors teaching 18 sessions, all available online, including a printed workbook to help you apply what you've learned and one-year access to AFA streaming content to give you even more resources. Find out more about Activate and sign up today at activate.afa.net.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. And today is Tuesday, September the 8th, 2026. And in studio with me today is Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Brother Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
Wesley Wildman.
Good morning.
And Chris Woodward.
Hello.
All right, I like that spirit, Chris.
Thank you.
Fred, well, that's enough though. I mean, you can get back to, but I like the opening, you know, opening enthusiasm. Fred Jackson's not here today. Where is Fred? Was Fred tariffed?
Yeah,
because he's a Canadian.
Canadian. Yes.
We slapped the tariff on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
no. Deservedly so.
He's now demanding 15, 25, and 50% more from AFN to appear on this.
Y'all didn't hear? Y'all didn't hear?
No, what happened
he's
to him?
He's tracking down his lobster. He's tracking it down. It didn't come in.
Oh.
So he's about to find out where it is.
Oh, he took a day off to find out where his lobster is en route.
For those that listen often.
Yeah, Fred orders lobsters from Boston.
And this one didn't make it in.
Or Maine or somewhere up there.
Really? It didn't make it in?
I'm kidding.
Oh, all right. Well, that can happen. Hey, I don't trust the mail.
Yeah, but to track it down, I don't think
He has a, well.
He has a passion for it.
Fred's talked about ordering lobster from.
There's a restaurant up there in, is it Nova Scotia or is it in Maine?
I think it's in Maine.
Yeah.
Where they'll overnight it.
Yeah.
And he loves his lobster now.
Yeah, he loves it a lot, but I don't, maybe not tracking it down though.
No, I don't think, Fred's not a lobster hunter.
That's right.
You know, he doesn't track down lobsters.
Today on the History Channel.
But we've all ordered something we were looking for in the mail that didn't come in, and then you get the tracking code out, and then you start calling, and you want to know where it is.
This says it's supposed to be delivered.
Today.
Right. All right, we have got a lot to talk about today. Lots happened since last Thursday, last time we did a Today's Issues show here on the American Family Radio Network. Thanks. Hope everybody had a wonderful Labor Day weekend, and it kind of marks the end of summer, doesn't it?
It does. Oh, he's laughing at the heat.
Forget
the weather for a second.
Yeah, it does.
The weather pays no attention to the calendar.
That's true.
Huh? So we roll on with 90s in the 90s for most of the, for a lot of the country anyway. But it is kind of the unofficial end of
I think
summertime.
September 21st thereabouts is the official start of fall. But usually after Labor Day, most people start thinking that way.
Yeah.
Start thinking about when can I pull out my sweaters and.
How did you celebrate Labor Day, Ed? Like, what did you do
when I was growing up?
Yeah.
For one thing, school usually started.
Yeah.
After Labor Day.
That's true. I remember those days.
Yeah. When I was in high school, my dad put a swimming pool in the backyard, and we got to swim in it.
Above ground or in ground?
In ground.
Wow.
And sometime in June, the water warmed up enough for us to swim in it into August. But after Labor Day, we covered the pool.
You get 2 months in Boston of pool weather.
July and August were the 2 months. June,
yeah.
It was a little iffy because it took a long time for that water to warm up. We got the swim 2.5 months, I guess. Mm-hmm. But so that's what I always remember. And it was a pain in the neck to cover the pool. And then I had to start raking leaves.
Yeah.
It was a difficult life growing up.
I understand. I can hear that. I can hear it in your voice.
Yeah.
All right, Chris, what's on the first news item here?
Well, you know, Labor Day, in addition to pumpkin spice lattes and dreams of cooler weather, it often brings in many college football games. And I'm going to begin here.
Okay. With college football. Interesting.
Good. Yes.
Good for you, Chris.
College football kicked off over the weekend with many games, including one out of Michigan, which resulted in a very well done and cheeky Babylon Bee headline. When it comes to the Michigan game against Western Michigan.
Do you need to tell people what happened here or no?
I can
do
this.
Probably.
I can do this.
Okay.
All right, so let me set this up. All right, so Michigan is playing at home against Western Michigan, a game that on paper the Michigan Wolverines should be winning handily.
Oh, they were like 25-point favorite.
Correct.
Something like that.
Yeah, so you have your little brother, so to speak, come to town and play you in your house. And Western Michigan is doing its thing, and they're holding the Michigan Wolverines to 7 points. Western Michigan has 6 points. Then they get close enough to kick a field goal. Now they have a lead in the second half. They're winning 9-7.
This is riveting.
They get another field goal. They're up 12-7. Mm. Michigan gets the ball back with just under a minute to go. They start driving down the field, and as time is expiring, the quarterback's pass sails out of the end zone with what is clearly 0-0-0 on the time clock. And everybody thinks the game is over, including Michigan players. And then the camera cuts to the referees who are having some sort of conference at midfield to discuss something unbeknownst to the thousands of people that have already stormed the field.
How much money can we get out of Michigan?
Correct. All right. And then they announce that unbeknownst to all the people watching at home and all the people sitting in the stands, there is, according to some clock no one sees, 1 second left in the game. Allowing Michigan one more play. The quarterback doesn't throw it as deep into the end zone. A guy catches it, and Michigan goes on to come back against Western Michigan. A lot of people take to social media talking about how Michigan has stolen the game.
Wait a minute. Hold on just a minute. That was a 60-yard Hail Mary pass in the air.
Yes.
Despite whatever you think of time expired or not, 99.9% of the people, I think, believe time had expired. That was a marvelous throw and catch to end the game. It was a heave. Like, it was like Doug Flutie-esque. You remember that?
Flutie? 1984, Orange Bowl. Mm-hmm.
So anyway, what's the controversy? Game over, right, Chris?
Well, yes. But apparently, according to the Babylon Bee, some scientists at the University of Michigan apparently developed the ability to travel back in time 1 second and change the outcome of this game. So I'm breaking news here to America on this
Babylon
great program.
B, what you sent that out.
Oh, yeah, I sent that out. That was funny. First of all, it's not funny if you're anyone other than a Michigan fan.
Right.
Clearly one of the worst calls ever. But the Babylon Bee, to their credit, managed to turn this thing around into something funny. It says, in one of the most remarkable technological breakthroughs of the past millennium, scientists at the University of Michigan have successfully traveled backwards in time by 1 second. Long thought to be outside the realm of possibility, the dream of time travel became a reality on Saturday night. And the only problem is that the scientists have announced that, weirdly, their time machine only works so far when the University of Michigan is losing.
Yes. You heard it
so
here
that's
first.
That's pretty funny.
Watching that game. I felt bad for Western Michigan. Because Western Michigan coach and their players, you know, they pulled off. This is a major, major upset, especially inside the state of Michigan. You got, as you say, little brother Western Michigan traveling to the big house and trying to defeat the mighty Wolverines. And it appeared that they did. And then, we're going to put another second.
You know what this reminds me of?
What?
Although I hate to bring up communists at a moment like this.
Right.
But back in 1972, during the Olympics, the United States was playing the Soviet Union. The United States had amateur players at that time. There's no dream teams.
Yeah.
No professional athletes.
These
are college kids, whereas the Soviets clearly had what amounted to professional athletes on their teams. But I remember watching the game with my dad, and the U.S. won the game, and the East German referees, I think they were East German, they said, wait, 1 second left on the clock. The Soviet Union got the ball, inbounded.
And 1 second left?
1 second left. The Soviets inbounded. The U.S. Defended the play. The Soviets said something happened. They give them that 1 second over again. They throw the ball in, and there's a tap in, and the Soviets win. I'm not sure I've ever
seen... real thing?
Yeah, this is a real thing. Okay. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure I've ever seen my dad madder than he was at that moment, because the whole family, we all hated communists, like any red-blooded American should.
He was a Marine.
He was a Marine. He got up out of his chair. I don't remember what he said, but it can't be repeated.
Whatever it was.
Whatever it was. And he grabbed the phone, wanting to call someone. I don't know who he thought he was going to call. Give me Nixon. And he just put it back on there. He was so mad.
Yeah, but this
imagine. I'm sorry. This is what this reminds me of. A home field call on the part of Michigan. And poor Western Michigan got ripped off, I think.
And now, not to defend Michigan here, and I saw what y'all saw, and then I rewatched it and re-saw what everyone saw. Mm-hmm. I did read something where the coach for Michigan was arguing for 0.2 seconds left, but I've never seen a football game or any sport go down to a tenth of it. Like in basketball, now I take that back. In basketball, they may do that.
Yeah, they'll go to tenths.
But in football, I've never seen that before.
Yeah.
But nonetheless, we all saw it. I don't even think there was 0.2 left based on what I saw. But anyways, that was a case to be made.
All right. Well, one other note on time travel, mm-hmm. and then we'll move on here. In college football, the Ole Miss-LSU game played on November the 4th, 1972 at Tiger Stadium in Baton Rouge, undefeated and reported – headed to the Orange Bowl. LSU somehow ran two plays in the final 4 seconds to beat the Rebels 17-16. So you can run two plays if you're the home team in Baton Rouge in 4 seconds if you need it to win. That was the case in 1972. So this isn't the first time that the clock at home has magically went the home team's way. You can't run two plays in 4 seconds, but they did.
They did.
And LSU beat Ole Miss.
There's all kinds of shenanigans when you're the home team. Yeah. I remember watching the New England Patriots. I don't think they were the Boston Patriots at that time. I think their name had changed. In a snowstorm, they were playing somebody, and they were about to try to kick the winning field goal. Mm-hmm. And while the timeout was going on, both teams off the field, they ran a snowblower onto the field and cleared off a spot where the ball would be placed for the kick.
Oh, did they really?
Yeah.
That gave them an advantage there, yep. Huh?
Well, that's not really hidden. That was in your
right
face.
Out of the
yeah, there's nothing illegal about it, but it just seems
sure.
wrong.
Oh, right? Yeah, absolutely, yeah.
All right, today's issues, the name of this program, well, it's time for some tariff talk,
yes,
people.
It is. So, tariff talk with Christopher.
Wesley, you excited about tariff talk, Wesley?
I'm fired up.
Yeah, thank you. Yes.
This,
go ahead.
This segment is sponsored by the new Trump coin. All right.
Oh, man.
I might get called fake news okay. later.
All right,
that.
People,
but anyway.
Stay with us. I just ask you for let us bring you 1 to 2 minutes of tariff talk. Do not turn off the radio.
Yes.
Okay, over to you, Chris.
All right, so a while back, President Trump announced he didn't like how Canada was treating Americans and consumers and farmers.
Not one bit.
So he announced that the U.S. was going to be tariffing or taxing products from Canada. Mm-hmm. Canada recently announced, well, whatever you're going to tariff or tax, we're going to do the same thing. So starting today, Canada is enforcing what are called retaliatory tariffs against various U.S. products. In a story you can find on our website, AFN.net, you will see that Canadian tariffs hit hundreds of American products, including steel, aluminum, cheese, appliances, clothing, cosmetics, and farm equipment.
Wait, hold on a second. One of these things is not like the other. If you were going down that list of items, go down them again. I'm gonna check them off.
Steel?
Yep.
Aluminum?
Yep.
Cheese.
Huh?
Appliances.
Cheese.
Clothing. Cosmetics, not to be eaten. And farm equipment at various rates of 15, 25, or 50%.
Oh, man.
Hockey equipment is also being tariffed.
Listen, I got to know this, and I know this is strictly selfish
yeah.
interest. Is that 50% applied to cheddar? Because I'm going to have a problem.
Only if it's from Wisconsin.
I'm going to have a problem
with
that.
Well, you don't live in Canada, though.
Huh?
You don't live in Canada. This means more cheese
for
us.
Yeah, but they're gonna start tariffing our cheese. You know, it's going to be cheese on cheese.
Now, right here. Cheese on cheese.
Yeah, like a pizza.
Yeah. Mozzarella. Yeah, let's get some good mozzarella.
Yeah.
Okay, so to be fair to the Trump administration, Canada has been, for many, many years, playing us for suckers.
Correct. That was Trump's argument in the first term when he redid NAFTA.
Yeah. What kind of tariffs and on what kinds of products do you have?
We just mentioned that, I think. Are you talking
about ours? No, this is, they're slapping tariffs on
our stuff. Okay, what are we slapping on them?
All right, this is the part where we say, oh, yeah.
What were they previously tariffing in terms of U.S. products?
We're handling this really well.
I know.
I'm moderating right now. Go ahead.
Yeah, go ahead.
Pretty much the same list, but at different lower rates. Now, in terms of what we have been taxing, dairy and agriculture, 50%. Automobiles and auto parts, 25%. Alcohol and beverages. Canada makes a lot of brew. Lumber, paper, pulp, steel, aluminum, consumer, and miscellaneous goods.
The bottom line here is we are now in a trade war with our friends from Canada.
Mm-hmm. Which is a big trading partner in any
administration. I don't know if that's good or not.
Yeah, with the whole tariffs thing, and I'm not going to try to pretend like I can break all this down, but simply put, though, and this is what everyone in the Republican and those that support Trump believe. We've been done wrong from a tariff standpoint across the globe for years. Why Trump decided to start making it an issue is a different conversation. But I think what we can all, at least I can observe and agree with is that we've been done wrong. America's been done wrong from a tariff or from a taxing or tariff standpoint. Now, whether this is the right time to pull this type of leverage,
right?
I mean, I guess we'll wait and see. But you know,
all right, we've exceeded tariff talk time.
Okay, I do want to just clarify one thing, if we could, here on tariff talk.
Clarify
before we move on. Is what I was talking about is before the Trump tariffs on Canada. So pre-2025, Canada's tariffs on the U.S. targeted dairy, poultry, eggs, softwood lumber, cultural products, alcohol, and tobacco. Some of these tariffs up to 245%, for example, for things like butter. So there was a long list of things that Canada had already been slapping tariffs on. And so President Trump was trying to do is level the playing field. So
that's why I think he's doing now. He's still getting a lot of people. This can be a confusing topic if you don't understand the history.
Not right. For Ed.
Nope.
Ed's got his head wrapped around this tariff stuff.
Yeah.
That's why he's on the show today.
That's right. So I'm glad I could help.
All right, bring it on. Next story, Chris.
All right, the GOP is going to have a convention this week in Dallas.
What?
The GOP, the Grand Ole Party.
Yeah.
It's going to have a convention this week in Dallas. And President Trump is supposed to appear and speak there a couple of times.
A midterm sort of a rally?
Yes, one of the first they've ever done there in Texas. And the reason why it comes at a very interesting time is, according to some polls, Democrat James Tallarico is leading Republican Ken Paxton in the race for U.S. Senate. So people are expecting this to be kind of a rally of the troops, get out and vote for Ken Paxton, don't let Tallarico win. And one Republican that was on television today telling Texans do not vote for James Tallarico is none other than Republican Senator Ted Cruz, who's faced a couple of big challenges in recent years from people like Beto O'Rourke. But here's what Ted Cruz had to say about Tallarico. Clip 4.
Tallarico is a very talented candidate, but he's an extreme candidate. His substantive views, he would make a fantastic Senate candidate in California.
Mm-hmm.
But in Texas, I mean, this is a guy who says God is non-binary.
Yeah.
This is a guy who says there's six genders. He wants a state income tax. He wants to put a welcome mat on the southern border to welcome illegal immigrants into this country. He ran a vegan campaign because meat is destroying the world. Again, this is Texas.
we shall see what other Republicans have to say later this
week. Well, you know, all the polls show this race in Texas as close. And I'm talking about the United States Senate race, and it's very important for the Republicans to win that if they want to maintain the majority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I've said before that I, you know, if you had to guess today based on the polling, the Democrats are probably going to win the House of Representatives back. That's typically what happens in midterm elections when you have a whoever the president is, whether it be a Democrat or a Republican. The opposing party almost always makes great gains in the midterms for whatever reasons. That's just the historic reality. But I'm of the opinion that even if let's just assume that the Democrats take over the House of Representatives, the main thing for the Republicans is, and for conservatives is, that they maintain control of the U.S. Senate. Mm-hmm. Why do you say that, Tim? You know, see what I did there?
Yeah.
I asked myself a question so I could continue talking.
Continue talking.
Yeah. Wesley, you interested in this at all? Or?
Go ahead.
Okay. All right. Just making sure I haven't lost you. In all seriousness, the maintaining of the U.S. Senate is the most important thing because all the federal judge appointments that President Trump would have left in his remaining 2 years in office would go through the Senate. And the Senate could, if it's controlled by the Democrats, they'll block them. They'll block them. At least they'll block the vast majority of them. Federal judge appointments, and those are so crucial to our nation's health, whatever you want to say, the state of our country. We've got to have more conservative federal court judges, as many as you can get through. So that's why I say, so back to the point where if the Republicans lose the Senate race in Texas, that's terrible.
Mm-hmm.
That would be a terrible thing to happen if you believe in, you want to see President Trump be able to appoint federal. There are a lot of other responsibilities that the United States Senate has. I understand that. But to me, there's nothing more important than the confirming of federal judges. Is that?
No, it's very important, and I don't like the way the polling is going. In Texas.
Wouldn't that be a stunner, though, if the Democrats won the Senate in Texas? I mean,
they won't do it.
Okay. Well, I don't think so either, but the polling keeps showing that Tellerico is
their line.
Tied or ahead.
Or ahead.
Wesley says it's fake news.
It is.
I have no way of knowing. So but I will say this.
I looked at history. They do this all the time. That's the reason I call them a liar on the polling.
Okay. All right. Well. Although, yeah, you do have to remember, Cruz did win against Beto O'Rourke when polls were saying O'Rourke is a dead heat. Mm-hmm. But he narrowly won, I think.
It was close. It was
2 million votes.
Listen, I was talking to a gentleman who lives in Dallas who was I was with the other day. He was in Tupelo, and he's a Christian conservative guy like us, and he said that it's really, really close, and of course he was going on the polling. Everybody else goes on, but the polling on the statewide levels, as well as the polling done by national firms, but he said this. He said, Ken Paxton, is it Paxton or Paxton? I'm sorry.
Paxton.
Paxton.
Paxton. That a lot of people see him with a lot of baggage.
Well, Cruz beat Beto O'Rourke by 215,000 votes. Okay,
that's
now
not
was,
a lot in Texas, is it? Is it?
That doesn't sound like a lot in Texas. I am concerned about the race in Texas. I know a lot of people think I do tend to worry. I am a worrier. But you do have a lot of Hispanic voters who voted a lot higher percentages for Donald Trump in 2024, don't know who they're going to vote for this time around. And young people who are switching to socialism, if they come out in mass and vote for Tallarico, we could be in trouble in that state.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Republicans could.
But anyway, this gentleman was saying you know, it's nip and tuck. It's close. And that Paxton
baggage
is has baggage that's affecting his support.
Yeah. Friend, we're living in a defining moment. Today, a woman facing an unexpected pregnancy can order the abortion pill online, often before anyone has the chance to tell her that she is loved, that she's not alone, or that there is hope. That's why you are needed right now. You are made for this moment. At Preborn Network Clinics, mothers are welcomed with compassion, practical support, and a free ultrasound. And when she sees her baby and hears that tiny heartbeat for the very first time, fear often gives way to hope. In fact, more than 80% of abortion-vulnerable women choose life after seeing their baby on an ultrasound at a Preborn Network clinic. That one moment can save a baby's life and open a mother's heart to the hope of Jesus Christ. This is our moment to stand for those who cannot speak for themselves. Just $28 provides one life-saving ultrasound. $140 helps rescue five babies. Please don't wait. Dial pound 250 and say the keyword baby. That's pound 250, baby. Or give securely at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR. Together, we can save lives one heartbeat at a time.
Hello, I'm Walker Wildman. My brother Wesley and I, we're going to be leading a group to Greece in March of 2027. We're going to be traversing and walking the footsteps of Paul, visiting cities like Thessaloniki, Athens, Philippi, Corinth, just to name a few. Many of the sites that the Apostle Paul walked and taught and preached and converted unbelievers to Christianity as part of our early church history. And then right after that trip, my parents, Tim and Allison, they're going to be leading a group to Italy, looking at a lot of the rich Italian history, along with the history of the early church there in Italy. They're going to be visiting the cities of Venice, Rome, and Florence, just to name a few. Both of these trips are back-to-back. You can go on one or both by visiting tours.afa.net to register. We'll see you in March of 2027. tours.afa.net to register. Find out all the information and view the itinerary.
Your love, Lord, reaches to the heavens. Your faithfulness to the skies. Psalm 36, 5.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Everybody, to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Tim, Ed, Wesley, and Chris, and we're talking about the midterm elections coming up, and a big race that the nation's really watching is the Senate race in Texas. And we had mentioned Paxton, the Republican, versus Tallarico, the Democrat, and it's the polls are very, 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 very close. The polls are, for what you think of the polls. And but Paxton, as far as his job performance as Attorney General of the state of Texas, I don't think anybody across the country from a conservative perspective has done better in that role. Maybe the AG in Missouri.
Yeah.
You know, as far as, but I mean this, so that's not an issue among.
Yeah, his conservative credentials, I don't think, are up for really for debate. He right. does have some, what we might call cultural baggage. There are some.
You don't like his culture?
No. I don't want to speak out of turn. I think there's some questions
very well
about his relationship with his wife, and so I don't want to repeat stories out of tale here, out of school, I guess. But so for Christian conservatives, that his support for Paxton's support may be a little softer than it might if he was just simply a conservative that will get the job done.
Listen, we live in a different world than we lived in 30, 40 years ago, and I'm not saying it's a good thing. I'm just saying the reality is you have to pick, when it comes down to two people, okay, then you have to pick the one you can't disqualify somebody for their personal behavior. That doesn't sound good. Do y'all know what I'm trying to say? You have to look out.
You have to prioritize. I think the best way to say it is you have to prioritize what most affects you as a voter.
What is the person? Let's just say. Okay, like Bill Clinton, for example.
Okay.
That's kind of when all this first started. Before Bill Clinton, sexual immorality was kind of under the table. It wasn't talked about. Mm-hmm. It was kind of JFK, Marilyn Monroe, and all that stuff. It was kind of hush hush, or
the general public didn't know any of that.
No, it wasn't. But after Bill Clinton's situation and affairs and so forth, that became to be an issue publicly, right?
Yes.
But I remember the Democrats basically saying the same things a lot of Republicans say because let me tell you something, that kind of thing affects human beings.
Right.
And it doesn't matter whether they're Republican or Democrat, that it happens on both sides of the aisle. But what I'm saying is that when it comes down to two people, and one of them's going to be elected, right? One of them's going to be elected. Then I think people have come to the conclusion that you got to go with the person, their policies, and how are their policies going to affect everybody, rather than what we used to do in America, which is basically if you cheat on your wife, you're disqualified from running for office. That no longer, I'm not saying that's a good thing. I'm just saying that's the reality of where we are in our country today.
Well,
would you agree with that?
Yeah, and I think the reason for that, for the way it used to be, is because both political parties were seen as wanting the absolute best for America, but taking a different approach about how to get there. Mm-hmm. So the conservatives were tough on crime, money for the military. The liberals were less money for the military, more money for, welfare and all those kind of things. But everyone pretty much agreed both political parties are not going to they're going to try to support our constitutional system. Mm-hmm.
This came up during Trump.
Yeah. So, but what
go ahead. I'm sorry. Yeah,
but now we have a situation where the two political parties are in two different worlds.
Right.
So we look at those on the left and say, they want to destroy the republic. They want to change us into something else. So now we don't have if you want to say it this way, we don't have the luxury of counting character first. What we
That's
need,
a good point.
In other words, if you have a communist running for president,
right,
and that person is a straight up family man, faithful to his wife, you go, yeah, that's great. We all want that for our candidates. But he's going to destroy the country. So what I have to consider first is, who do I want in office? Who's going to preserve the republic?
And so on iVoter Guide, Ken Paxton is verified conservative.
Tell people what iVoter Guide is.
iVoter Guide is the AFA Action voter guide that AFA Action oversees. So we have a staff for iVoter Guide who rates candidates based on several factors, a couple of which would be their scorecard, their endorsements, where they get their money from, how they voted, other information in recent.
And Ken Paxton has the highest rating there.
You couldn't
get conservative.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, and so they have moderate, they have conservative, they have very conservative because of how they talk and how they act. Verified conservative means is his record is proven.
Right, right.
And you can't possibly get more conservative from what impacts the voters than Ken Paxton.
I think this came to the fore too in 2016 when Donald Trump ran. Everybody knew he was a playboy from his past,
we've talked about this before.
Yeah, but and again, from his past, okay, and he was a New York, business tycoon. So he wasn't. In fact, he had to introduce himself to conservatives and to Christian conservatives, in particular, leading up to the election 2016. But the bottom line was, I think, to what your point, Ed, is, and what Wesley's saying is, that people realized, okay, when it comes down to, especially when it comes down to two people, and I have to choose. I have to go with who's going to be the most conservative in policy when they take office. Mm-hmm. And all the other stuff is sort of, you know, drifts to the side. Now, what would you say? Here's the challenge, though, I think, for us. Then we can move on to another topic here. What would you say if you were, I'll ask you, Ed, and then Wesley, Chris, what would you say if you're on a, let's say you're on a TV show or a news show, or you get an interview and they say to you, well, how can you as a Christian conservative, especially with American Family Association, American Family Radio, how can you endorse, and I'm not speaking about any candidate in particular here, I'm asking a general, generic question. How can you support a candidate who's admitted to the adultery, and you call yourself a Christian organization? Shouldn't that disqualify you from leadership? How would you answer something like that?
I think you should go first to Wesley on that question. Look, I'm just kidding.
Went Bert Harper on
well,
you, man.
Yes. I'm ready.
Yeah, there you go.
I mean, that is a
no,
real
it
question.
Is.
Now, it's a question
straw
coming
man
from
question.
Most. It's a question coming from more people on the left who want to try to say it's hypocritical.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
So this is what I say.
And then Wesley can comment
and then,
fill in your gaps.
That if I have, we had some, let me just give you a real life example. We had some issues. We live out in the country. We have a septic tank. We had some issues this weekend, so we're going to have to get our septic tank pumped out, okay? I don't ask the person who's coming out to do that how often they go to church or what their moral status is. I want to know if I can have this thing done by someone who's qualified and will give me a good price, because that particular job requires only a particular skill for a price that's affordable. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, when you come to political leaders, it's a little more problematic because most of what they do kind of falls into that category. Okay, we want them to build roads. We want them to pay for police and the military, and we want them to be, you know, good with money. There is a moral component to it. And for most of my adult life, that moral component was very important. Except now we are contemplating candidates who are pushing socialism and communism and atheism and getting young people on track to change their genders without their parents' knowledge. And to me, those issues come to the top.
Gotcha.
And the category of their moral character drops down beneath that, because I can teach my kids and my grandkids what candidate X is doing that's wrong in his personal life. But I don't want my kids or grandkids taken away from my family and given over to atheists. To me, that's a whole different category of concern.
I think if the left is asking the question, I don't think they deserve an answer or our time. If their Christian is sincerely trying to figure out
the question I posed,
an answer to it, I think that's worth discussing. And if a Christian has their conscience is bothered by that in particular issue of someone's personal lifestyle, then I can understand why they would not vote. But voting for the other team doesn't make any sense.
Oh, no. Yeah. Well, you know, also, just one other thing, we're going to move on here. The left is not bound by these questions at all.
Right.
Because they don't believe in
adultery being a sin.
Sexual morality matters not to them at all.
That's right.
They don't even consider that.
Story
they don't even consider that as a disqualifier.
In Massachusetts,
which
they
is why I wouldn't waste
bill.
Time
yeah. right, right.
having
in,
a debate.
No, they don't care.
In Massachusetts, they just passed a bill, and the governor signed it into law, allowing abortion up to
the moment of birth.
The moment of birth.
Correct.
Okay. Now, if you have a Republican running against that kind of governor, and there are some questions about that Republican's moral qualities, I'm looking and saying, how many babies are going to die
I got
if
you.
If the
no,
Democrat
I got you.
Gets voted in.
I got you. No, I'm there.
And one last thing on
one
that.
One last thing, then, Chris. Okay. You can close it out and move on to another topic. You got another topic?
I do. Yeah.
Okay, go ahead.
I don't have much more to add to. I think I agree with 100% the way Ed described, and I like the analogy as well. I will say this, though. As Christians, we are all fallen, and therefore we have testimonies every day of people who's done something wrong. They've been caught. They've made a change, and then they get back on track. That happens all the time. Now, I understand you have repetition. So if he's on his, you know, I guess what I'm saying is at what point there's a discussion to be had about forgiveness and making a change, and that and then there's a discussion to be had about someone going on and on and on and repeating the same sin over and over again. Both of those are a discussion to be had, but that, like I said, what I prioritize what their record is as it relates to how it impacts me as a citizen.
Yeah.
Chris, wrap it up for us.
Okay, so in 2026, I appreciate people outside this ministry are concerned about morals, but I would argue that it would be immoral for you not to vote and let the person out there sharing or saying heretical things.
Talarico.
Yeah. If God, you're going to sit at home and not vote because of morals and let somebody living and ruling immorally have their say in things, that's a problem, I think.
All right, next topic, Chris.
All right. This is something that I hope is not true.
I hope so.
There is a publication out of the UK called The Telegraph.
Mm-hmm.
And according to The Telegraph, in a story over the weekend, this is their headline: Pentagon refuses payout for soldiers killed in Iran because it isn't a war. And they have the phrase, because it isn't a war, in quotations. According to The Telegraph, the Pentagon is refusing payouts for people and their families when the soldier dies in combat in Iran. And there have been American casualties in the situation that began earlier this year.
Combat. You sure? I mean,
it says conflict.
Okay, conflict. Mm-hmm. It's conflict, not necessarily combat. You know, can you, by the way, can you and your team try to contact the Pentagon
and see if you can get a
comment from them? Because this didn't sound right to me in terms. Pete Hegseth, the Secretary of War, is that what it's called now?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
He is a very pro-soldier, okay, and pro-military. I mean, he should be. And so it would surprise me if he doesn't do something about that, if in fact that's true. The headline caught my attention. I did read the article because there was one widow of one of the do you have that information?
I do, yeah. Okay. Libby Klinner. She's the widow of Major Alex Klinner.
Okay. What do you have any more? Can you read more on that?
Yeah. She wrote on social media that she has not received appropriate pay following his death in an aircraft crash during the conflict in Iran.
Right. What she's saying, and again, we're just reporting what she's saying, that really bothered me when I read it, was she's saying that the Pentagon has told her she is a widow, doesn't qualify for benefits associated with the death of her husband in service because it's not a war, not an official war. And I was reading that going, that's not right, okay? Yeah, that seems to me like that needs to be rectified. Is that?
Yeah, the problem, this is a bad decision if this is what the Pentagon is saying, because the president does, as commander-in-chief, does have the legal authority to send troops into combat without a declaration of war from Congress. And I've pulled up here that 18 U.S. service members have been killed in the conflict, and some of them have been killed in what you might consider to be combat because they were killed on bases when Iranian missiles or drones struck. Mm-hmm. There was a helicopter crash, I think, that in March that also took the lives of several. So this is combat in the sense of hostilities between our military and another country's military. Whether or not it's an officially declared war, I think, is irrelevant.
Yeah.
They were sent into harm's way doing combat operations and were killed.
Yeah.
And that seems to be the end of the story to me. Mm-hmm. I can't imagine, to your point, Tim, Pete Hegseth not overturning this.
I'll bet he does something about that in the next day or two.
And somebody that may tell him to do something about that is Vice President J.D. Vance, who obviously is not president, but still holds some weight. And I bring up Vance by name because Vice President Vance has reportedly responded to this woman's social media post by committing to reach out personally, and the War Department later confirmed all benefits after review. So we will follow up on this, but a terrible headline that you don't want to see during this. It made me think of something. My dad, he dropped out of college back in the 60s and got drafted and was sent to Vietnam. And as Ed is aware, you guys are aware, that was not considered a war for a long time. And my dad came home and was told, you know, that's not a war, all these things, terrible things. And I remember my dad telling me one time, he's since gone home to be with the Lord, but my dad said, look, they shot at me and I shot at them. We were at war. Right. You know, that's how we put it. And it's we did the same thing with veterans of Korea as well. We didn't call it a war for a long time.
Right. I don't remember the last time the U.S. has declared war on anybody. Do you?
Well, I think we declared war after 9/11.
Yeah, officially? On who?
Iran and Afghanistan.
Okay. Well, look that up. Look that up, because Brother Tim's having a foggy memory on that.
It has been 25 years.
A official declaration of war on Iran and what?
The United States last officially declared war on June 5th, 1942, against Axis-aligned nations of Bulgaria, Hungary, and Romania during World War II.
Oh, I think I guess I'm wrong.
I'm not laughing.
You're laughing. No, I deserve it. I get this all the time at the house.
We've declared war 11 times across.
And we haven't officially declared war on anybody since World War II.
1942.
Yeah. So.
Okay. We were fighting in Iraq and Afghanistan for 20 years without a formal declaration of war. Yeah. All right, I was wrong.
You
misspoke.
Feel better.
You
misspoke. I was wrong.
That's what they say now.
All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Next story.
Talking about 9/11 real quick, one organization out there trying its best to make sure young people know what really happened that day and why is Young America's Foundation. For 20-some-odd years now, they have had a 9/11 Never Forget project where they go out on college campuses and they put flags out for all the people killed in 9/11. They put out visual aids and stuff like that for people to walk and read and see on their way to class. And I spoke with YAF's media coordinator, Rob Tandy, about this very thing. Here he is, clip 8.
We felt that there was a void in our education system and just frankly around the country of telling the story of what actually happened on that day, that we were attacked by Islamic radicals. So what we do is we give our students the educational materials to be able to explain what happened, as well as honor all of those murdered. And it's extremely important now, especially on college campuses, when we look, you know, a lot of our students in college now, we're not even alive. So it's important to continue to tell that story and to continue to educate those on our campuses.
We have more of that story on AFN.net. And do check out the website this week because as of today, we're going to be doing 9/11 stories for the rest of the week.
So 9/11, what's today, by the way?
The 8th. It's Friday, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay, right. So it'll be the...
Unless I'm wrong.
25th anniversary? Oh, yeah, no.
Correct.
You wouldn't be wrong twice in one show.
That was embarrassing wrong.
Yeah, it was.
But. You saved me because I was thinking the same thing. You just said it first.
Well,
my first thought was, how in the world 20 years
without a declaration of war?
Right. Well, 25 years since 9/11. It's hard to believe it's been that long.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But so there'll be a lot of commemoration around that day.
Yeah.
Next story.
President Trump was actually at a Tunnels for Towers event earlier today that is always done around 9/11. He spoke at this event, which is one of several speaking engagements.
Let me ask you this. I think after this 25th anniversary commemoration, 9/11 will probably not be as much every year in the people's consciousness, I'm thinking. Because, I mean, how much more can you say about it? You know what I'm saying? than
You're just honoring those who died like you would in a war. It'll probably continue, but the further something moves into the historical past, the fewer people are alive who were affected by it.
You know. All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Tim, Ed, Wesley, and Chris. Chris, you've got about a minute left. What do you got there, Chris?
I will share this on our Today's Issues Facebook page as well. But we oftentimes discuss artificial intelligence and the developments and amazing things that AI is now enabling people to do.
Yeah.
AI, this is an actual headline. It's not a Babylon Bee. AI may soon allow humans to talk with animals. But some say it could violate their right to privacy.
Well, I thought it said that AI would allow humans to understand what animals are communicating. It's not going to help us speak to them, is it?
Not in that sense, no. But it would be interesting to have a conversation.
I think they're saying AI could develop, and I'm not kidding here,
bark
sounds that animals use between themselves. Wesley, a bark. That's AI. But would develop.
Well, I'm thinking Dr. Doolittle wouldn't benefit.
I know.
He wouldn't be able to benefit. And now he's got a job.
We've got a new dog in the house here, a few months old. I would love to have something. I'd love to speak into something.
I was going
to
give
phone.
You.
And then communicate that to that dog.
I think this topic deserves a little bit more than time. So we're going to continue this when we get back, because I got a couple things to say.
All right. Dr. Doolittle on the phone.
Yeah.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.